So every week, we bring in songwriters from Nashville, and I learn a little bit more about what happens to create a song. In this case, some of the music you may be familiar with from the guys who are here, and they'll talk about other artists they've written with, but maybe you know this. We all know, right? This is Big and Rich, and the interesting thing about Big Kenny and John Rich is that you have such storied histories. In fact, I was just talking with you guys about this in an interview for Ty Kelly and Chuck on the show. Kind of the things you gave up, you know, the lives that you lived and have included at some point, Opryland and, you know, Lone Star John and Kenny, you've got your solo album that clearly gave a better perspective on who you are.
When John and I met, I had my first solo album out, Hollywood Records, which was, it was called Live a Little. That's right when we first met up. And then I was finishing that record up. John wrote some songs on that with me. And then we were working on a record for you. Then we got John a solo record deal. And we're writing songs on that. Underneath the Same Moon.
When you guys met, did you meet and decide we're going to work together? Were you originally introduced to songwriters that were going to just do a co-write? Or did you come together as
Yeah, we were introduced by a mutual friend. This gal named Cindy Simmons, she was known as the guitar chick in town. She worked for Fender and Guild Guitars at that point, and knew John and all the guys in Lone Star during that era. And I guess it probably gotten you a Fender bass or two at a time. And she'd run into me playing around town and help me and my band out with some guitars. And she's just a real music lover and used to be out there in the middle of it all the time. But I never forget her telling me one day, I got this friend named John Rich. If you haven't met him, y'all got to meet each other. I just know that y'all would hit it off. You got to write a song together. You got to write together. And she kept encouraging us. It was months and months that she stayed on it until I was playing a show at Douglas Corner here on 8th Avenue one night. And she brought John out to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm up there. Doing what I do, and at the end of the show, I always used to want to make sure everybody left with a little something extra than just a song in their head. So I'd bring a bag of a candy or something like that, you know. I'd try to get the discount after Halloween candy, and I had a big bag of bubble gum that night. It was that double bubble stuff. It's kind of hard.
Individually wrapped.
And I was grabbing a big handful, and I says, here's something for everybody in the back of the room first. Make sure nobody leaves with a little something. And I slung it all the way back to the back of the room, and John happened to be standing there in the back wearing his cowboy hat at that time, and unbelievably, one of them pieces of gum hit him right underneath the hat.
Right between the eyes.
And I think John was a little leery about meeting me in the beginning anyway.
Well,
and
between that and the lawsuit.
Just sealed the deal.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome. So you guys were brought together as songwriters.
Yeah, we wrote our first song in October of 1999. Like Kenny says, we both had solo aspirations going on and didn't think, being a duo, that never entered our minds. But once the Music Mafia Jam started in like 2000, Kenny and I would basically just take songs we had been writing that week and we'd play them on Tuesday night at Music Mafia. Go, here's one we wrote yesterday. What do y'all think? And out of that, it started turning into a sound because Kenny sings in one register. He's a little lower and I'm a little higher. And we're both lead singers, so I thought I was singing lead, and he thought he was singing lead, and it's still that way. If you listen to a Big and Rich song, you'll hear both of those voices going the entire time, and you really don't know who's singing lead, but it just makes that sound, and that all happened at Music Mafia, which came from being songwriters.
Do you guys remember one song in particular? You've got your guitars in front of you. Is there something that you guys could play from, like, way back in those days, 99,
oh, wow.
2000s?
Let's see.
That's Why I Pray. So,
we'll add this one.
Just a little bit.
In my pocket. My pocket, I got a little rocket, a rocket, a rocket. I took it and I lit it, and now I'm gonna fly it to the moon. In my pocket, I got a little rocket, a rocket, a rocket. I took it and I lit it, and now I'm gonna fly it to the moon. You. Stuff like that. That song goes on for five more minutes.
You guys
by the
make
way.
Me so happy. This is why everybody comes to your parties. It's because it's like that's such a good vibe.
Yeah, we come up with just a lot of craziness back in those days. There was a song we came up with during the Mafia era that really became a standard just at the Mafias. That I guess we put it out on a fan pack, but that was probably the only place anybody heard it. We saw this guy here the other week, so that's what's making me think of it. And his name's Limo Larry. Limelaire was a limo driver. It used to grab up all the people who'd be at the mafias, and if they'd been drinking or anything, he'd give them a ride home.
He was
home,
like sure an independent limo driver. Safe. He owned his own limo.
Yeah. So we had this song we wrote called Limo Larry. It goes, Limo Larry, take you gotta see.
Yeah.
Limo Larry, take you anywhere. Where you wanna go? Where do you want to go? Yes, Limo Larry, take you anywhere. And that was a Music Mafia standard, man.
That was how we finished every show.
Screaming that one. It was right around that same era, too, John, that at that point in time, I guess, when the Mafia started really, you know, kicking into gear, we were kind of in between record deals. Like, my solo deal, it kind of took off, but then it hit a bit of a brick wall, and my label's on the West Coast. I was here. Things just, it didn't work out as gloriously the first time as I'd hoped. But it was during that era also, my manager, knowing that I could use a little cash to get through the month, that one summer, right around 2000, 2001, he asked me, he said, Kenny, I'm doing this project. It's called Priceless Edge. We got 30,000 essay entrants from all around the world, and 50 kids are going to be given an all-expense-paid trip to Nashville. But 30 days, we're going to put them up and show them all aspects of the music industry. And if you could be a songwriting mentor, I'd really appreciate it. And what that'll be is you're going to break them up into groups, write songs with them, and then y'all will record, take them in the studio, show them how you record a song, and then we'll get you up on stage. You can show them how to perform it, too. And not only did we do that, but we got to know them all. Next thing you know, we're throwing them in the back of John's pickup truck every Tuesday night from where they were standing up there at Belmont and driving them to the Music Mafias.
And would you like to know two of the songs that were written as Kenny and I are sitting in front of 10 college kids?
Of course.
Two songs that were written that everybody knows. One of them was and we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitar, sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner, if you want a little bang in your yin yang, come along.
So the whole thing was about the Belmont kids?
Yeah,
that
so we
started
had...
from going around, so there's 10 of them in a group, right? And we walk in there into every group, and we'd always introduce ourselves and want to meet all them. We asked them their names and where they were from. And in saying their names and where they were from, then we took every city that one of those kids from.
Let's try a test. Can we get every one of your cities into a song and it actually makes sense?
And we had this song idea, which was still believing, by God, we're going to be out there playing music all over the world, just to say in a song that we are coming to your city and we're going to play our music for you. And it's going to be a good time.
So you had Cincinnati. We blew through Cincinnati.
And we all got really happy. Grabbed a bowl of that Skyline Chili along the way.
And every city
from
there.
We rolled on into Canton.
Yeah.
Scared the hell out of Marilyn Manson. The party started happening. Hey, hey, hey.
And Chippewa's where we go when we're up in Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the whole.
In the middle of a Charleston
night. We wrote that song in about an hour and a half. The other song that happened was Save a Horse Ride a Cowboy.
I was going to say that as a joke.
Dude.
Yeah, it was
we wrote "Save Horse, Ride a Cowboy" in about 60 minutes, sitting in front of 10 college kids as they have their clipboards out, watching what we're doing. I wish I'd get my hands on those notes.
I was like, every song that we actually wrote and got recorded in some way, shape, or form. That's actually a cool way to write. I'd highly recommend it. I'd love to do it again.
It was almost like songwriting and performing at the same time because you've got these people watching you.
Well, even in radio, I've seen that. It's like if somebody comes in, they ask me questions about radio, I feel better at my job the next day. Because I got to walk it through out loud almost, like do it out loud. Here, I'm going to play Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy real quick, just a clip of it. And give you guys a sec to think, because I do ask for a writer's rule in every single one of these podcasts. And there have been different ones. I mean, people say it starts with a lyric. There will be people that say it, it started with a riff. I think Rivers Rutherford came in. He kind of played this little riff, and so he was a music guy. Everybody has a different way that it starts in the room. This doesn't have to be your hard, fast rule, but if you're talking to new songwriters...
It starts with 10 people watching you in a room.
Yeah. Belmont students win a contest. No, but right after the clip, I'm going to ask each of you separately kind of a rule of thumb that you have when you're writing a song.
Because I saddle up my horse and I ride into the city. I make a lot of noise because the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my own. Suddenly Roy and the girls say, save a horse, ride a cowboy. Everybody says, save a horse, ride a cowboy.
All right, was that enough time to think?
Yeah.
John,
yeah.
You look like you're ready. What?
Yeah, I was very pensive.
This is kind of the way that I picture people listening to this podcast. They're either a songwriter already or they really want to be and they're trying to learn.
Right.
What's something you say about it?
I've described to people, I write a song like in this room we're sitting in right now. If you took a snapshot of this room on an old Polaroid camera, right, and you just went snap, whatever is encased inside that picture is the song. So, for instance, if you like it's a moment in time kind of thing is really what I think where I write my best stuff. So if you look at a song like Mississippi Girl, right? So in my mind, you know, Faith Hill had come to me when we were out on tour with Tim and she said, I wish you'd write me a song. I said, I'd love to write you a song. What do you want to sing about? She said, well, a Redneck Woman had just come out. She goes, well, you know, kind of like how you wrote Redneck Woman for Gretchen and that's just her, you know, mm-hmm. That's like her biography. One of those kind of songs, but for me, like it would only make sense if I sang it. Okay, I said, all right, well, give me a few days to think about that. And I'm going, wow, what a homework assignment that is. So I'll never forget watching Faith go from backstage in her flip-flops and ball cap and just hanging out with everybody to walking out on stage in an evening gown and singing It's Your Love with Tim McGraw and then walking back and right back into her flip-flops. And that little snapshot of her doing that, I went, that's her. That's what the fans don't know about her. The fans, they just think she's the one out on the stage.
And that's literally the picture you painted in the song.
And so I started working on that, you know. It's a long way from Storm, Mississippi. Which, by the way, when she said, write a song that only I can sing, I said, well, I'm going to start it off with a line that finishes that part of the deal because nobody else is from Storm, Mississippi except Faith Hill that's on
and
the radio.
And her family.
When I finally finished the song and I handed her a copy of it. I said, well, I've written a song that only you can sing. I don't know if you're going to like it or not. And she sat right there in front of me and listened to it. Big old tear rolled out of her eyes. She goes, that's it. That's the song. She goes, I'm going to go cut this next week. And wound up being a number one song with Faith. And
I'm going to play a little piece
really
of
cool.
Yeah. Her version so you can hear what, because that's cool to see that came from your eyes backstage watching Faith.
Because a Mississippi girl don't change her ways. Just because everybody knows her name. Ain't big headed from a little bit of faith.
That's just was my perception of her. So you can go through a lot of songs I've written and they will all have that exact same technique applied to them.
I love that. Kenny, what about for you? Big Kenny's writer's rule.
For me, some of the easiest and best songs that have come out of me as a writer have been from something that was an experience in my life. You know, something that was a radical thing that happened in my life. It just, you know, magically hit me like great song ideas do, you know, whether it be the idea or a lyric or a melody, they kind of, if you just have your antennas up all the time, I think that's one of the greatest things you can do as a songwriter is just have your antennas up that when the great creator decides, I'm going to bless you with this one, then you're just ready to receive it. And you know, you've received it. So you pay attention to it. And, I think that there have been some like that have really hit me that have made the greatest differences, you know, in songs. You know, and I think of one, I'll never forget, you know, I was at a time in my life here in Nashville. I'd been through a record deal. I was sitting in my apartment over on the other side of town one day, and I was looking at my, I was looking at the gray a screen of my TV because I hadn't that was the one thing I was going to cut out that month.
Cause, didn't pay cable.
Yeah, it was cable, but I still just had this belief and this drive I was going to do it my life, and this chorus hit me, and I called up John. I said, man, I think I got this chorus, and I remember rolling over to your place there
in Hillsboro. I'll come over if we can watch TV.
That night. And I said, listen, John, what do you think? And ended up on our first record, too. It was... Last night, said his name was Jesus. Met a man on the street last night. I thought he was crazy till I watched him heal a blind man.
I watched him heal a blind man, now I see. And I live this life till this life won't let me live here anymore. Then I will walk, I will walk with patience through that open door. I have no fears, angels follow me wherever I may go. I live this life until this life won't let me live here anymore.
Yeah, and that came from two situations. It was that moment where I was sitting there and that chorus came to me in the apartment. But then when I went over to John's, I say, hey, you remember we were rolling downtown last week? And, you know, when you were up on Printer's Alley, me and your brother were down on Broadway. Remember when I said, hey, we'll meet you up on Printer's Alley? And from the moment we left Broadway, as we're walking up the sidewalk there to Printer's Alley, just out of nowhere, this dude jumps in front of me, says, who are you? And I said, who are you? And he goes, I'm Jesus. Jesus, what's your name? And he was kind of a little bit out of it. And I could tell he was maybe even a bit homeless at that point in time. And so I just said, well, hey, come on, Jesus, you can come with us. And he rolled up there into Printer's Alley with us. And, you know, we got to the bouncer at the front door, the guy didn't want to let him in. I said, no, he's with me. So he came in and we took care of his beer all night, man.
That's awesome.
And he turned out to be a really cool dude. But it was, if he hadn't said that, and I hadn't had the antennas up, it wouldn't have hit me like, oh, wow, that is the truth.
You never know what you're running into out there in the world. If I can tell you a story about Tom Petty real quick. So I got to sit on a songwriters panel with Tom Petty in Los Angeles in like 2004 or 5 with ASCAP. And there was about 3,000 songwriters out there in this room, and they were lining up behind microphones to ask us questions. So obviously, it's Tom Petty. He's the rock guy, and I was the country guy because I had some hits, you know, a bunch of hits going on at country. He had like an urban guy and an R&B guy. This first lady, they take her question. She goes, I have a question for Mr. Petty. She goes, Mr. Petty, how do you get your ideas for your songs? And Tom, he's all slouched back in his chair, kind of looking like Tom, you know, eyes are about halfway open. He goes, well, I just stick my antenna out there as far as it'll go, and every now and then one will just kind of drift across it. And that's all he said. And the whole place just erupts into applause, which is exactly, I think, to Kenny's point, is sometimes, man, they do. It's like if you're not looking for the song, generally it ain't going to hit you. For us, if we ever get a chance to rest long enough, and then you wake up in the morning and you stick that antenna out, just start listening to what's out there in the air, man, they start coming to you.
Well, it's cool to hear that come from a different, you know, different backgrounds in music, because clearly, to all of the points that were just made, that's something that is creating great songwriters. Like, you know, you probably had never heard Tom say that at that point, Big Kenny, when you started to believe that yourself, but that lesson that you picked up on your own and Tom's lesson that he probably picked up on his own is what created great songwriters in the world.
You know, the most daunting thing out there, I think, is a blank sheet of paper and a pencil. Because there it is.
Waiting for you.
Whatever you're going to put on that, it could wind up changing your life. It could wind up changing other people's life, or it might be something nobody ever hears. And it's all just depending on what comes out the end of that pencil that day onto that piece of paper. And to me, that is the magic of songwriting, is that you never master it. There's never such a thing as I'm the greatest songwriter. Nobody will ever tell you they're the greatest songwriter. Everybody's got their own approach. And that blank sheet of paper, man, it's also one of the only things that we could control. You know, when Kenny lost his record deal and I lost my record deal, the only thing we could control at that point was a blank sheet of paper and what we were going to put on it. And that's when all these songs started happening, man. And I think that's something for songwriters listening to this podcast to keep in mind. A lot of things are out of your control, but that's not. And your mind is your mind. You can wield it however you want to, and that pencil is your tool, and that paper is where you put it.
Yeah, you can, as a songwriter, it's probably one of those few things to where you can take away everything from someone. I mean, you can have nothing to work with, but you can still, in your mind, write a song and tell a story. You know, if you got holed up on an island, abandoned, you'd still be able to write songs.
So. Well, let's look at artists that, you know, because we've now talked about Faith Hill. We've talked about Big and Rich, Gretchen Wilson. There's all these different artists out there. And then, you know, Jason Aldean is another one.
Yeah.
When you guys are writing songs that end up in the hands of someone else, for instance, I'm going to share a little piece of Hicktown.
Yeah, we let it rip. Down.
as the writers involved, how did that start? Is that something where you went and wrote with Jason Aldean, or you went and wrote for yourselves and it ended up there? What happened?
He's going to love this. So Kenny's over at my little apartment again, and our buddy Vicky McGeehee, who, by the way, wrote Holy Water, and she's on California, Arnie's single. She's just written tons of great songs with Kenny and I over the years. It was the three of us. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I think we were a little hungover, Kenny, if we're going to be honest.
A little hungover.
We'd all been out the night before. And
with Jesus at the bar?
I said, yeah, right. I said, man, I had that lick, that rock. I had that little thing going. Kenny goes, that's cool. I said, man, we ought to see if we can get the phrase butt crack on country radio. And that's the frame of mind I was in.
As soon as he said that, I was just thinking about my construction days and all these plumbers and roofers and everybody. As soon as they get to work, and next thing you know, they're just shining you with that butt crack from behind. And it just kind of steamrolled right into all these pictures, really, all these things you could see out in that world.
Again, it's a snapshot. I think that was when we combined well is exactly that. Kenny's out there free-flowing, and I'm more of a snapshot guy, and you put those two together, and you get this kind of thing. I mean, Hicktown's about your town is the best town in the world because that's where you live, and that's where the most fun happens for you.
And you were just writing as writers at that point? Were you sending it out, pitching it to people?
We didn't have a record deal or anything. We were just writing songs.
We were writing. We were going at it every day.
Well, it's got to be fun to watch other artists now. And for me, I've always said that the song is, the reason it was created is what's most interesting to me about a song. But it's because it's 3 minutes that's going to influence the rest of people's lives. I mean, really will change lives. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys wrote Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy with these students that stayed at Belmont. So that's 10 people that were right there that saw the moment and really got to enjoy it. And they'll always remember that.
Yeah.
You guys will always remember writing it. You'll probably remember certain shows where you performed. It's 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I did a parody of it one time. So again, for me, that'll always stand out. That song created a memory just by being part of a thing on the radio.
It's turned into like Sweet Home Alabama for us. It's like, I tell Kenny, I said, we could be in our 90s and they could roll us out there on stage, prop us up. And as long as we go, they're going to jump.
And they'll sing along.
It's our Sweet Home Alabama.
It's our Stairway to Heaven. That's it. Sweet Home Alabama.
But what's the one that stands out for you the most, whether it is a song that ended up on a Big and Rich album or didn't end up anywhere or ended up with someone else that you love when that memory comes back to you?
Man, I was sitting in Vegas in New Year's Eve of 2002, again, in between record deals. That is another way for those of you who don't know of saying you're broke. Uh-huh. In between record deals. My manager at that point in time, Mark Oswald, had invited John and I to come out there because it was going to be the first show of Alabama farewell tour. And he had a whole block of rooms free out there, and we were going to have a room, and got a cheap Southwest flight ticket and went out there, ended up in Vegas to see that show, and then which was awesome. Then we were celebrating New Year's Eve in a big suite. And then it's getting late in the morning, and I'm thinking I got to go back to Nashville the next morning. And I had like $100, you know, I had nothing. I was going to be facing my bills again, being as the first of the month. And I went down to the room, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do with this? And I said, we got this $100. You need to get down to a blackjack table.
I mean, that's perfect sense.
Let's do what anybody would do. Let's turn this into to thousands.
You'd be dumb not to. Yeah.
So I went down I sat down to that blackjack table, and 3 hours later, I'd run that $100 up to about $800. And I'd won 10 hands in a row. If I was going to double that one more time, then I'd have enough to cover myself coming back to town. It was going to be great. So I pushed it all out there, and the dealer dealt. And when she came back around, she flipped over a card, and lo and behold, she had a blackjack. And I didn't. So
you couldn't even push.
Needless to say, that was one of those moments in life you never forget. But I did have a $20 chip and a $1 chip. I handed her the $20 chip, and I said, thank you. That was a blast. But I've got to be getting on a flight in a couple hours. I'm going to go back up to my room. I better keep this one because I'm going to need a little something to start over with. Yeah. And I went up to my room. I sat down on the edge of the bed. I went to pull my boots off, and a heel came right off the bottom of my boot. Unbelievable.
Just so I laid kick you when you're down, huh?
What next, Lord? And it came down to my last dollar. I've walked right through my shoes. A friendly small reminder of all the hell that I've gone through. But look at me still smiling, cause I'm wondering what I'll do. Cause since I ain't got nothing, I got nothing to lose. And 1, 2, 3, like a bird I sing. Cause you've given me the most beautiful set of wings.
And I'm so glad you're all here today, 'cause tomorrow I might have to go and fly away. Everybody say, wave, fly away, fly away, fly away. Dum, 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 dum.
How about that story?
And wow. Then next thing you know, we're out on tour with Tim McGraw in 2004, because lo and behold, we got another record deal. And that Christmas after that year, I'd finally paid off all this credit card debt I'd built up over those years of being in between record deals. And so I had some money. I went in the studio, and I happened to be at the same studio that Tim was in working on his album. And he came through the studio. I had just cut that.
And he didn't know this story yet?
He didn't know the story or anything about it.
Because it ended up being Tim's song for anybody.
He came in and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm finished up a mix on this new song. You want to hear it? He goes, yeah. Played the song. He looks at me. It's kind of like that California story a little bit. He looks at me and says, you're going to let me cut that, right? And I'm thinking, doesn't happen.
Wow.
Like, what are you talking? And
sure, Tim.
Yeah, sure, Tim.
Went number one, didn't it, Ken?
Yeah.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
See, but, and that's a memory.
I mean, what a story. I think, again, some of the greatest songs to me personally are the ones that really came from an experience in life, you know, came from something that is just real. And so it just, when it's real like that, it's probably going to be real to a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of other people have been at places like that in their life where, hey, you might be broke, you might be down and out completely, but you still got hope, you still got faith, you still got the belief, you're still going to go out there and do it.
That's
and,
what they call country music, Big Kenny.
There you go, Brother John. It is true. It is true.
Brother John, if we can wrap it up, can I get a story before you got to go of
sure.
just a song that creates such a strong memory for you, whether it's yours, whether it never got cut? Somebody else's.
Yeah, there was coming off the road. My girlfriend of a few years had about had enough with me, and good for her, because she should have had enough with me at that point. And I got home, and all my stuff had been put in trash bags and thrown out in the front yard next to my truck with a note that said, don't come back. And so I said, oh, okay. And so I took off and went out like I normally would down to Lower Broadway in Nashville. I'm walking down the sidewalk, and who do I see walking coming straight towards me with this new guy? Her. Walking with this new guy.
Already.
Big guy, right? Like, guy that probably whooped my tail. And I went, oh, brother, of all the people I could see. And as we meet each other on the sidewalk, she looked at me for about a millisecond, and almost like she looked right through me. Like, her eyes, it caught me for a second, and she just kept moving. And I was so struck by that because I'd been seeing this girl for years. And so I went back, and I started writing this song. Because you never look so good as you did last night, underneath those city lights. There, walking with your friend and laughing at the moon, I swear you looked right through me. But I'm still living with your goodbye, and you're just going. How can you just walk on by without one tear in your eye? Don't you have the slightest feelings left for me? Well, maybe that's just your way of dealing with the pain, forgetting everything between our rise and fall. Like we never loved
at all. Awesome.
Wow. Yeah, man.
That's how it happens, y'all. That's how it happens.
I loved every bit of this. Thank you guys
Thanks,
for coming
man.
In and doing it.
Nice
Thank you, brother.
You.
We love every bit of it, too. John and I will always say when we're asked, you know, when you got to fill out those forms, you're going through an airport into a foreign country or something that says, what's your occupation? Well, first and foremost, we believe we're songwriters. Because without the song, there's really nothing else. So it starts with that, and it has been just an absolute blessing that, you know, the Creator gave us this belief that that was something that we could do. I can remember a kid hearing songs and going, how do people do that? How does that happen? So that you're doing this program, that's really cool.
I'm that
man.
Kid. Yeah.
Super cool. And it's so neat to have hit those places in our lives where we see that this is how it happens, man. This awesome. Is how it happens.
Usually
so
I
God
ended,
bless the song.
This is usually at the end of the Writer's Rule podcast, I'll be like, hey, do you think that people should still, you know, pursue their dream to become a songwriter? It's a weird time. I'm going to let a certain song do the talking because I feel like I know how you guys stand when it comes to pursuing dreams. Hey, the latest from Big and Rich.
There you go.
One more out. That's California, man.
Thank you guys.
It's a 3-day drive if she drives all night. Says she's leaving at the crack of dawn. Well, she might still be lying here with me, but in her heart she's already gone. Already packed up, the Altima's gassed up. She done put the map up there on the dash. I'm all tore up, just trying to man up. Damning these tears up, but can't hold them back. She's in love with California and that West Coast sunshine dream. These ain't no
actually want to add a little bit. If you're still with us, this is a story from On Air with Ty Kelly and Chuck. We chatted with Big and Rich about California. I just thought it was really cool to hear the stories behind their lives and the big chance they took when they left everything else behind. We'll start with Big Kenny answering the question, what was the hardest thing he left behind when he pursued his dreams?
Everything. I mean, I left the farm in Virginia. No, I'd never really been out of the state at that point in time in my life. That was everything. You know, my was the one of four siblings that had stayed in my hometown and was helping my father with the farm and taking care of all that. And that was a big, big, big deal. And I'll never forget, you know, it was my grandma's birthday. I was there. We were walking around the farm. Pop puts his hand up on my shoulder and says, you know, son, you know, I'm not as young as I once was. I'm ready for you to take this farm over anytime you want, you know, and be the future. And I said, Pop, you know, I love this place more than anything, and I'll do whatever it takes to keep it all rocking. But I kind of been thinking I wanted to go down to Nashville and just see what it might be like down there. And I'll never forget him. Then he pat me on the back and says, oh, son, you take off and try that. I'll keep this place going. Don't you worry about it. It'll always be here.
That's a good
So he was just, you know, just as beautiful
a
man as you could think of. And actually, this is the first Christmas we'll celebrate without him being here.
Wow.
So when you ask about what's the family's going to do, me and my siblings, we all got together there on the farm to celebrate Thanksgiving, because one of the most important things to my parents was just to make sure that we all got together and just enjoy what family's all about and slap each other on the back about whatever's going on in our lives and keep that positivity going. You know, God bless Pops and my mother, and we're going to have ourselves a Merry Christmas this year, no matter, and we're going to be thinking about you and celebrating.
And we asked the same question of John about the things that he left behind to chase the dreams that he had.
When I tore off into music, I landed a job at Opryland USA, which used to be here in Nashville,
yes.
Which is where Opry Mills Mall is now. I wish we still had Opryland. But I auditioned for that park on a show there when I was 17. I was a senior in high school, and I got the call back, and they said, all right, we want you to work this next summer at Country Music USA at Opryland. I went, okay, this is it. I'm in. Well, I already lined up. I had a couple of universities that wanted me to come there, and my parents
never told me.
Oh, I know.
University. You
could have gone to college.
I had two of them. Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, eighth grade was the longest 4 years of my life.
Yeah. One was the bartending at university.
But I did have a route I could go to school, you know, and pretty much have it paid for. So my parents were excited about that until I told them, hey, I got this job. They said, well, that's great. You can work at Opryland this summer, and then you'll start school in the fall. And I went, yeah, no, I met this guy at Opryland, and he's starting a band. He wants to call it Lone Star, or call it Texas C at that point. We're all from Texas. So I think I'm going to go with those guys, and we're going to go play Holiday Inn lounges all around the United States in a Jeep Cherokee pulling a U-Haul trailer.
The dream.
College will still be there.
What did your mom? That's such a mom.
My mother said, she said, don't you think you should probably have something to fall back on? I said, I don't plan on falling back.
Aww.
And she went, well, and kind of gave you that look. So there was a lot of, you are really making a bad call here, dude. This is not going to work out well. But for me, my whole goal at that point was, how do I get on the Grand Ole Opry? I just want to play the Grand Ole Opry. If I play the Grand Ole Opry, that's it. I mean, you have hit the top of Mount Everest of country music, which I still think that. When you played the Grand, we got a record deal and Lone Star took off. And then after that, I meet Big Kenny and Gretchen and Cowboy Troy and all this. And now we're here talking to you guys. So, you know, I think the point to the California is it's worth the risk. Mm-hmm. Take the risk, get in your car, go do what it is that's your wildest dream, and at least hunt it down and see if you can make it happen.
Big and Rich, Did It For The Party is the name of the album. You can pick that up. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
appreciate
you
it.
So much.